Okay. Hello, everybody. Welcome to our session on in-app purchasing. This is in-app purchase for Windows Phone. If you thought you were in a different session, now is the time to get up and leave. I would like just to start us out to get a kind of an idea of who I'm talking to today. So can I see from a quick show of hands, how many folks here from North America? Anyone from here from North? Oh my goodness, it's almost everybody. All right, let's try South America. Anybody here from South America? I see a couple. All right, great. Good to have that representation. How about Europe? Folks here from Europe? Oh, the rest, the other half of the room. what about Asia? Do we have people here from Asia? Yes. All right. Oh, perfect. There's only one to go. Does anybody know what it is? Australia. Oh, awesome. Great to have you guys here from down under. Okay. Is there anyone here from Antarctica? No? Okay. Well, New Zealand is. All right, close enough. I take it. I take it. All right, great. All right, we have people here from all over. Thank you for making the time to come to this session today. I know you have a lot of choices. There's a lot of stuff going on in Build. I'm very pleased that you thought ours was worth coming to, worth your time. We're going to talk about a couple things. As you heard this morning, we launched our new Dev Center. The tools and everything are up there. We're going to look at that. But we're going to spend the bulk of our time on in-app purchase, and we will save some time for Q&A. So, what is this thing? What is in-app purchase? Well, you know, it's really pretty simple. In-app purchase is just the ability for you to sell digital goods within the context of your apps and games. You know, you're going to be really familiar with this, very common on iOS and Android today. Well, why is it important? Why should you care? It turns out in-app purchasing has had a pretty dramatic effect on our business, on this whole space, the mobile industry. 93% of the top 100 grossing applications on iOS use in-app purchase today. So it's becoming a very important propellant for application success. $1 billion last year in revenue alone. That's 2011. Here we are nearly through 2012. And they expect it to go up to $4 billion, according to eMarketer's estimate, just in the next couple of years, 2016. So this chart is it's a bit of an eye chart, a little bit hard to read. So let me try to talk you through what we're looking at here. This is something that I got off the Flurry blog. I thought it was pretty interesting. So on the left-hand side, on the y-axis, you're seeing the percentage of total revenues that a particular app accounts for. And along the bottom, what you're seeing is the rank of that application in the top 100 list. Now, the green line is 2010, and the blue line is where we're projected to be this year in 2012. Now, the way to sort of conceptualize this, to imagine it, is as a couple pieces of pie. There's a piece of pie up on the left that points up this way, and there's another piece of pie, that kind of long one, that goes out this way. The amount of pie that we had in 2010 versus the amount of pie that we have in 2012 is dramatically different. We're seeing almost a doubling in the amount of total revenue made by apps in the top 100 that comes from that part, from the slots 10 through 70 in the top 100 list. So what changed during that time? Well, that's when in-app purchase was launched. So it had this effect of really changing things around. Okay, so what is the system in-app purchasing good for? What do we really do? It's just a payment system, right? That's what it's about. We enable you to take payment from a bunch of different kinds of payment providers that, if you were to go build this on your own, would take time and energy away from you doing what you do best, which is to build these really amazing product experiences. So Microsoft is here to unburden you with that integration. You'll notice along the bottom here, there are some names of mobile operators. I want to touch on that just a minute. Our platform offers mobile operator billing for in-app purchasing, and this is unique in the big three. What does it matter? Why is mobile operator billing important? Well, take a look at this chart. This illustrates what happened when we enabled mobile operator billing on one mobile operator. The red part of the chart, the little bars, the red part is attributable to MO billing, and the blue part is attributable to credit cards. when we turned this thing on, we saw revenues spike on this one mobile operator. Okay, well, that happens one place. Maybe it's a fluke. Let's look at another case. Sure enough, we see this pattern repeat. So whenever we enable mobile operator billing on one of our partners' networks, we see this huge spike. Turns out that people prefer mobile operator billing. 75% of them who have both mobile operator and credit card available, they use the mobile operator. And when we turn it on, the pattern we see is a 2x increase in revenue. It's about making it easy and fluid for people to complete those purchases. In a lot of markets, people may not have ready access to credit cards, and this is just a great way to make it possible for people to do things. All right, so you've seen this slide many times. Over the course of the last several releases, Windows Phone has made a big push to try to get out worldwide to as many places as possible. And here we are, landed in Windows Phone 8 with 191 countries and regions and 50 languages, yada, yada. You've seen this. So the natural follow-on question is, okay, how many of those countries and regions is in-app purchasing going to be available in? And the answer is every last one. We make in-app purchasing available everywhere that we have app purchasing with all of the same purchase implements. All right, good. So there it is, the sort of the business of in-app purchase and why you might be interested. So what can you do with it? Every system has a policy about what you can and can't sell, and ours is no different. But I think that you'll find that ours offers some flexibility that may be absent from some other systems. So can you sell game items? Yes, you know, swords, levels, characters, you can sell that kind of stuff. Functionality, if you want to, for example, add a map or add a level to a game, you can do that. You can accelerate gameplay. This is becoming more and more common. So if it takes time, for example, to build a particular building in your game and you want to shorten that amount of time, you can purchase the acceleration. Ebooks and magazines, very popular. You know, lots of people are buying those through in-app purchasing. Digital images, you know, MP3s, music, stuff like that. One of the most requested is virtual currency. So yes, using our system, you can implement your own virtual currency system that affects a micropayment model within your economy. Really powerful tool. It does need to be all used within the context of your applications. But yes, you can do it. You can even do a couple sort of interesting cases, some physical, you know, real-world things. So if you wanted to take a picture with your phone and then make a postcard out of it, as long as it was, you know, edited and produced entirely on the phone, same thing for a video. If you wanted to create a video and then send it out on a, you know, USB or DVD or something like that, you could do that. And of course, you can do service-based things. So if you want to have a map for a little while you're visiting a, you know, a foreign country, that kind of stuff. Okay, so here it is, the old contract. Thou shalt agree to this in order to use our in-app purchasing system. On the left-hand side, you see these are the things that that you do. You as the developer, you as your company. On the right-hand side, you see the stuff that Microsoft is going to provide as a part of the agreement. So, rating appropriate products, okay, that's easy to say. What does it mean? If you have a game, for example, that's rated E for everyone, we don't want to sell blood and gore as an upgrade. That's really what it means. What does Microsoft provide? You know, the handshake is we give you the product management tools to, you know, sell these things worldwide. You are responsible for clear and accurate product listings. We wouldn't want to end up in a situation, neither of us, where people thought they were buying one thing and they end up getting another. And then for our side, Microsoft provides these geo-distributed services. So we built out this all-new architecture for our store that spans the globe and multiple data centers to ensure that your customers have always got reliable, high-performance access to the catalog and purchase implements that they need in order to be able to purchase your items. You provide the UX to actually make the offer. So the store itself, the experience of the store, is inside your application. We provide the purchase experience. Now, we need to do that because we want people to have a consistent and familiar experience. We want them to be able to reuse the purchase instruments they've already saved in their accounts. And we provide the ability to pay with those purchase instruments worldwide. And every time somebody pays, you get a proof of purchase. You get a receipt of authenticity. Now, once you get the receipt, it's your job to actually enable a thing, you know, fulfill this product. And if you have any downloadable content, you know, like an MP3, for example, it's your job to go and procure the license to redistribute that material and then host it and download it from your own servers. Microsoft doesn't do anything to host the actual content itself. You provide testing and servicing of your application, which you know you always have. And what we provide as a part of that contract is the tools that you're going to need to do it. And you're going to see some demos of that a little bit later today. All right, so that's it for me. I'd like to invite up to the stage my buddy Saral from the services team. Hey, Saral, how's it going? He's going to tell you a little bit about how it works.
Yes. So I want to welcome you all here. I'm a program manager on the Windows Phone Store services team. We build the cloud services that power the marketplace on the device and the dev center. No talk would be complete without a demo. And to help me do that, I would like to invite Tyler from Four Bros Studio. They have been a great partner helping us iron out the kinks in the in-app purchase platform and so that we can build a product that we can be all proud about and offer it to you. So with that, Tyler, tell us a bit about what Four Bros Studios is.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here. Me and my brother started out making games as a hobbyist developers, and 2 years ago, we created a game called Taptitude for Windows Phone. Over the course of the last 2 years, we've been constantly updating this game.
So Taptitude is a fun little game. They do weekly updates, and when you get into it, you can play a bunch of little things. So why don't we go ahead and do a little demo of the application?
Real quick, we're having a little technical difficulty.
We're going to try it again. Well, we have another phone to try it. That's, you know, with sometimes with demos, some things like these do happen. All right, that's my phone. And that's Taptitude.
All right, so Taptitude is a collection of mini games. When we first started, we only had 10 relatively simple mini games. And over the course of the last 2 years, we've been constantly improving on that. We now have over 70 mini games. And each one of these are tied together with a rich in-game economy. Let's go into the upgrade menu for one of our most popular games, Fish Feeder, and I'll show you a few of the virtual items that we have to offer out of over 500 total virtual items.
So you can see that there's lots of upgrades here. And can you tell us how one gets these upgrades to earning coins?
Sure. So coins are throughout the entire game. And one of my favorite ways to get coins in Taptitude is to play one of these games called Coin Miner. So this is a really fun, really simple game, and you literally just mine for coins. So you control the guy in the top, and you tap to make him move and also to make him dig. The goal of the game is to collect as many coins as you can before the time runs out. So the deeper down you go, the more interesting things you're going to find, like diamonds, upgrades, treasure chests, you name it.
Well, it looks like my 2-year-old niece can dig faster than him. Can you speed things up here, man?
So in Taptitude, we have a whole bunch of ways to make you dig faster. If you open up the upgrade menu, you'll see a wide variety of digging tools, ranging from the most primitive and weakest pickaxe all the way down to the most expensive and most powerful Angel's Pickaxe.
What is this Angel's Pickaxe? It has like a million coins to do that? I'd have to play for like a week. There has to be a way to get this faster.
So with Taptitude, you can earn almost everything in the game just by playing it enough. But with in-app purchase, we're able to sell these items directly to the user using credits. So tapping on this will bring us up our in-game store.
That's awesome. So this is the list of items available for sale that the app is procuring from our server. So why don't we go ahead and get the 100 credits that we need for the pickaxe?
Sure. Tapping on that will.
So at this point in time, we bring up the wallet to make sure that we are only making purchases that we want and keep the kids away from making unwanted purchases. And this is a very important screen that Zach talked about. This is the standard purchase screen that we are all accustomed to seeing on the phone. Go ahead and purchase it. At this time, we are doing two things. One is we are making sure that the item is still available for sale, and two, it's at the same price that was listed. Once that is successful, we let the game know that the purchase has gone through and they can now unlock the goods.
So now that we've got these credits, I can actually go and unlock that Angel's Pickaxe and purchase this with credits. And now, with the new axe, check out how much faster I'm digging.
Ooh! That's a lot of fun, Tyler. Thank you so much for helping us with this.
Thank you for having me.
So for those of you who would like to try out the in-app purchase implementation, can go to the store and download Taptitude and get the free starter pack. With that, I'm going to go back to our presentation. My goal in the next 10 minutes is to give an overview of the in-app purchase platform on Windows Phone. But before we begin this journey, I felt we could share something about Seattle while we have you guys visiting us. So what do we have here? It's a picture of the vibrant Pike Place Market in downtown Seattle. In this illustration, the merchant is offering a wide variety of fruit and vegetables. While I was there recently, I had some delicious peaches, strawberries, and chocolate-covered pasta. So I highly recommend that you go visit, especially to check out the flying fish. Now you're wondering, why is this guy all of a sudden talking about food? What has this got to do with in-app purchase? Did the course of the conversation change all of a sudden? No, we are in the right place. Just like the engaging nature of this vibrant Pike Place Market, we understand your need for Windows Phone to support in-app purchase so that you can build engaging experiences and capitalize on the revenue potential that Zach talked about earlier. I share this with you because with Windows Phone 8, with in-app purchase, you can create a virtual market just as vibrant as this Pike Place Market. So let's see, what are the four key things you would need to do to implement in-app purchase in your applications? I'm going to talk about things to be considered at design time, the core constructs to implement the APIs, how to test, and how we submit through Dev Center. To get started, let's take the concrete example of Picture Puzzle. It's a fun little game, comes with 10 puzzles. Customers love it and have requested that they add new puzzles. What do you guys think about adding a Halloween puzzle set? As we are releasing around Halloween time, it would be a great reason for customers to come back and play. So how many of you have heard similar requests from your customers to add new features? Let's see a show of hands on that. Right? A few of you. So in a nutshell, such add-on features can be monetized through in-app purchase, making it a win-win for both you and your customers. So at design time, the first thing you want to consider is, what is the right monetization strategy for my feature? The in-app purchase platform on Windows Phone supports two strategies, consumables and durables. So what are consumables? Consumables are things that you can buy repeatedly to be replenished or consumed from within your application. This is like a bag of gold. This is similar to us in our real lives buying a carton of milk, consuming that milk with our cereal. When the milk is run out, we go back to the store and buy more milk, right? The other monetization strategy that our platform supports is durables. Durables are things you buy once and you keep for the life of the application. They are persistent in nature. An example of that is like a map pack for Seattle for some of who you are visiting, or the picture puzzle. Similar to us buying a car or a new home, which are persistent in nature. So let's say if you did pick consumables as a monetization strategy, your application needs to keep track of the usage or the consumption. What do I mean by that? So let's say you unlock 500 gold coins when you buy a consumable item. Customer uses 100 of these gold coins. The app needs to keep track that the customer still has 400 items remaining. You can do so by either using the isolated storage of your application or your own server. And finally, after a successful purchase, you need to unlock the feature. What I mean by that is, I paid for the picture puzzle, I should be able to play the puzzle. So in a nutshell, understanding the monetization strategy up front is important as it has design implications. So now that we have conceptualized our feature, the picture puzzle, you're wondering, how do these features become available as products for sale on Dev Center? So to understand that better, I'll take a real-world example of going shopping. When you go to a mall and pick up a merchandise for sale, you're going to see a price tag. A price tag uniquely identifies each item for sale, right? Similarly, the contract between the in-app feature that you are building in your game or application can be conceptualized as a price tag for your products that you make available through Dev Center. So let's review the elements of this contract. Each product requires an ID. This ID is going to be a key between our system and your application. After successful purchase, your application will need to unlock the goods associated to this ID. Well, a product requires a price, so that customers in India, China, Antarctica will know what they pay, and sometimes different prices. Also, each product requires a type, so the commerce backend in our side knows if the customer needs to be charged again in case of consumables, or it's only a one-time charge in case of durables. The next element is very unique to Windows Phone. Let's say you go to a mall. You generally go into a men's section, a women's section, a kids section. So why not be able to categorize your products? So for that, you can use keywords on our system. Tags are a free-form text element that is available to your application. In this example, I have a link to an image file that I plan to download after successful purchase. Every product requires marketing information, just like the merchandise you're trying to buy. You can do that by providing the metadata fields. So in a nutshell, each feature can be conceptualized as a product on DevCenter with unique properties that will be available to your application. So let's take the next logical step of writing our code. Like all developers, we love Visual Studio. So we fire up Visual Studio and add the namespace windows.applicationModel.store. I would like to note that the in-app purchase APIs share the same namespace and IDL between Windows and Windows Phone. So let's review the three constructs that you need to know to build. Yes, good, right? You can clap for that. You can clap for that. So let's review the three constructs that you would need to know to implement in-app purchase APIs. The first thing your application needs to do is to show the list of items available for sale. You can do so by calling the Get Product Listings API. Uniquely on Windows Phone, you can make this call by providing a keyword. As I said, a product can have a keyword. In this example, you see a list of puzzles categorized with the keywords Halloween and credits. Also, just like the other platforms out there, you can make the same call by providing a set of product IDs. So now that we have presented the list of items available for sale, let's say we buy the crazy looking pumpkin, right? Clicking purchase will bring up the standard purchase scene. Customers are accustomed to seeing that, as we saw earlier. And as you saw, my credit card was already set up. I don't have to enter anything. You ask, why is this beneficial to us? This builds trust with your customers and confidence. And as you know, trust is a true lubricant for successful commerce, making me more inclined as a customer to buy from within your applications. Let's say now that you have a successful purchase, it's time to unlock the goods. You say, Saral, how can I be sure that I'm unlocking goods only after authentic purchases? For that, my friends, you can rely on the hardened license store, which allows you to verify successful and authentic purchases. So let's recap the three constructs that this namespace enables. One, get product listings to show the list of items available for sale. Load the standard purchase screen by calling purchase. And finally, check the license store for authentic purchases. Now that we've built our feature and integrated it with the API stack, it is time to test. The emulator that ships with the SDK is a great tool to validate platform interactions. The emulator out of the box communicates to the catalog services. So some of you would say, well, I still don't want to set up stuff in DevCenter. I want to test locally. For that, you can connect the emulator to a mock. The information about setting up mocks, and an example will be shown later, is available on MSDN, the information about the mock. We have a link to that in this presentation in the appendix section. So once you connect the emulator to the mock, you can test end-to-end functionality just locally. So that's great, but some of you will say, well, the emulator is fun, man, but I gotta scale my testing. I gotta test on my device. What do I do for that? For that, you can submit your applications as beta and your in-app products associated to that application, which allows you to scale to a large set of testers. With Windows Phone 8, you can submit 1,000 testers. This is great. Now you can test on your devices with the beta submission. I also would like to share that with this release, developers can update their beta apps and in-app products, making it more efficient and iterative while you're developing. So with that, let's recap. You can test in-app purchase end-to-end from within the emulator or through the beta system, enabling you to build robust applications. It's time to submit. You use DevCenter to add your app and in-app items. In our system, we figured there is, you know, developers kind of go on their own pace. So you can submit the app and in-app items sequentially. You don't need to submit them together. So the key point about certification is that your apps that support in-app items would need to function fully even if the in-app items are not available to them. So you've set up in DevCenter, you're certified, it's available to your customers to download and enjoy. So DevCenter is the place where you can find your downloads, your sales, and your ratings information, all of this leading to you be successful and number one in store. So let's recap the four key things that you would need to consider. At design time, make sure you understand what is the right monetization strategy. Is it going to be consumables or durables? The three constructs to integrate with the SDK: get products, purchase, and list licenses. Test using the mock or the beta system. Submit in DevCenter. So there you go. It's quite reasonable to integrate in-app purchase in your applications. With that, I wish you all a lot of luck and success to create a virtual market within your applications just as vibrant as the marketplace we see here in Pike Place. I'll hand over to Nazee, who's going to show us some real code. Thank you so much for coming here.
Thank you, Saral.
Thank you, Nazee.
Hey, guys, how about a round of applause for Tyler from Four Bros? Thanks, man. All right, so my name is Nazee. I am an SDET on the IAP teams, and I'm here to show you how we do this. So, no slides. My weapon of choice is Visual Studio. I am not hiding behind the safety of PowerPoint. So, we'll see how it goes. All right, so what am I trying to do here? Saral told us about the constructs, the three main constructs that we want to learn, which is list IAP items, purchase, and be able to list the licenses to see if actually the person owns it or not. So what are we going to do? Let me just get this off the screen and load up. There we go. All right, so what I did was, need to minimize this. Sorry about that. Not mine. Just saying, that will be Zach. Keep getting babies, man, you're doing good. All right, so what I did was I went to Codeplex and I grabbed an app that's like a puzzle app that I found, and I was like, you know, this looks like a good candidate for something that we can convert to IAP. So I'm gonna just show you now what the actual original app looks like so that we can get familiar with it. So we will run it, and I will bring you the emulator so you can see it. There we go. So as you can see, it's a very simple app. It has a bunch of pictures, and you can pick one of them, and it becomes a puzzle, and then you can solve the puzzle, and it's a lot of fun, and that's pretty much where the app is. So I figured that is a pretty good candidate for something that I can do IAP in, because I can take a bunch of these pictures, give a freebie, and then the other ones, you can buy them. And just like Saral said, the first step is you gotta figure out what your monetization strategy is going to be, and I was like, I'm going to go for durables. Once you buy this picture, you shall always have it, and you don't have to use consumables for it. So to do that, I will show you what I did with the actual app. So let's grab this, which is over here. All right, so what I did, first step I did was I converted the project to, this was a Windows Phone 7 project, converted it to Windows Phone 8 using Visual Studio's conversion, and then I'll show you what it looks like right now. I built in a store in the UI so that we can see what it looks like. There we go. All right, so here's the app. It has one freebie, and then I put a button for a store, and it has nothing in it because I actually haven't implemented the IAP stuff yet. But that's kind of what I did in preparation for putting IAP in there. All right, so first thing what we want to do is we would like to enumerate, list the IAP items that we have. So we will see how we can do that. So we will use listing information. This is the object that includes all the information about all the products, IP products that you're gonna have. So we're gonna make a call to the service. Now, all of these all of these calls are asynchronous, just like you use with Windows 8 as well. So I like to marvel at the keyword that brings tears of joy to my eyes every single time I use it. So I'd like to take pause and just look at it because I just love this thing. And I will call current app.load listing information. Let's take a second over here. There's three APIs you can call. There's one that grabs you everything. There's one that says by keywords, which is what Saurabh was talking about, that allows you to specify an array of keywords, and it will only bring back items that match those keywords. And then there's one that if you know exactly which product IDs you have, you can just grab them directly. For the purpose of the demo, I'm just going to call everything. All right. So this, what I'm trying to do with this enumerate products method is I'm trying to return a dictionary that has key. The key is a string. A string is a key of like what the product IDs are, and then Boolean, which is true or false of like, does the user own this or does not own this? So what I need to do is to actually check licenses for every single item to see does the user own it or not. So to do that, I will loop over product ID and product listings.keys. So this is a dictionary. This has all the product listings. So this will give me back the product ID for every single one. And I want to see if it's active or not. So we'll set that to false. And then there's something called product license, which is the license for every single one of these things that we're going to be getting now. So how do you get the actual license for a product? It's pretty straightforward. You say current app.license information. So this is the object that includes all of the information about the licenses from the store, what we call the receipt store that's on the phone. Product licenses, the try get value, product ID, and we'll put that in plicense. Now, and then I'll say is active is equal to plicense that is active. All right, I want to take a second here because this is really important. On the product license object, you really want to call is active because it's very easy to be like, oh, yeah, if I got a product license for it, I'm good to go. It's all good. No, call is active because this does two things. First, when it returns true, it tells you that the person has bought this. But more importantly, is active will validate the receipt that was received from the server and do a signature check on it to make sure that it hasn't been tampered with. So you want to make sure your call is active as an indication of whether the person truly bought this or not and there was no tampering happening. So make sure your call is active. And then I'm going to add this to my dictionary over here, the product ID, and then the is active. And then I have this little cache over here that I have. If you remember from Saurabh's slide, he talked about the tag that you can put arbitrary string in it, and he put the URL of the image that we're going to download. So I used the same thing, and I'm creating a cache here that is a dictionary, again, of product IDs and the URLs. So to get the URL, it's off of the product listing, so I have to go back over here, product ID.tag. This way, I can look it up quickly without having to make another IAP call. So there we go. And then I return that. So this right now, what we'll do is we'll return to me a dictionary of all the things that I have in the store. So when I run the sample right now, let's see what happens. All right, so when we go to the store, you see that now this actually brought all the IAP items. All right, I want to make money. So I want to sell some of this stuff. So how do I actually purchase something with IAP? Turns out that making money is pretty important, and we wanted to make it as easy as possible. So I have a method here that gets called whenever you want to buy one of those things and you want to purchase. So to purchase, again, the tears of joy come as I call current app purchase product async. So there. What that will do, and I pass in the product ID, and then this is a Boolean that says, do I want the receipt back or not? The receipt is the receipt that happens when you actually make a purchase. It's a bunch of XML that comes down from the server over HTTPS, and it has a signature in it so that we can verify it, and then it comes down. If you want to get that back, like you see this returns a string, if you want to get that for any purposes of like I want to send it to a server that I own, I want to do some tracking with it, some customers wanted that. Some of you may not care. I don't personally care for it right over here, so I'm just going to say false. But if you say true, you'll get back a string that does that. All right, and that will do the purchase. So let's run the sample. And we go in here. and then we say purchase. All right, I got to be honest here. I'm not really running against the real thing. If you remember when Saral was talking, he said that there's ways you can test IP. So what I'm doing here is this is one of the ways that you can use to test it, where we created a mock IAP library that basically mimics the entire flow of IAP exactly, same API signature, everything. And it makes it really easy to iterate over your app quickly and add IP items in the code and remove them and set their status as full, as bot or not. It makes it very easy for you to design your flow of the app around IAP without having to keep going to the dev center to update things and add stuff. This way, you get the entire flow right, and then when you're ready, you can start just switching, removing the library, and then it hits the actual APIs, and then it will hit the actual service. And I'll show you how we do that later. But this allows me to very quickly do the IAP flow without having to worry about servers and the connections and stuff like that. So we'll say OK, and you'll see that we'll update to you got it. And then when you go back, it should show up here, but that's the last piece of code that I need to add. So I will show you where that goes. And that is a method that I have over here that says return the unlocked items. And the way I do that is I'm going to call my enumerate products, again, await enumerate products. And then I will loop over it, product ID in products.keys. And remember, this returns a dictionary of products and a Boolean, whether they are, oh, wait, look at me, misspelling for each. There we go. Sorry. And then it returns a dictionary that tells you whether, you know, this product ID was bought or not. And that's what I'm going to do to only display the ones that you actually unlocked. And I will do that by saying if product ID is equal to true, then just add it into the items. Product ID. And what I'm returning is the product ID and the link that I've gotten for the image, which I remember I put it in the store items cache. So I'm just going to use that. And it's keyed in by the same thing. All right, so let's see if this works. Remember, we made a purchase already. And there we go. The purchase is right there. And we can actually do more purchases. We'll clap later. Don't worry, I got you. Let's buy another one. Just make sure this works. Look at that. And there we go. And there, just like that, we've implemented IAP. The calls are very, very simple, as you can see. It's load listing information to list your informations, grab the license, the product license for every single product ID, and please check that it's active. You want the money. And then to purchase something, you just do a request purchase async. Now, I mentioned that I was using the mock library, so now I've gotten all my flow right and everything is good and I'm happy. How about I start hitting the real thing? So the way I do that is I've actually did an if def over here, where if I am in debug, I use the mock IAP library, and when I'm in release, I will actually use the actual APIs. And I'm going to switch to release, and now I'm going to hit the actual service. So hopefully the internet will be nice with us. As you can see, there's nothing now because it's a new thing. It's hitting the actual service. When I hit the store, these are items are coming through. When I want to buy one of them, let me just tilt this. You see that it actually shows this is a purchase scene that looks a lot like the one the customers are going to get. But when you're running in the emulator, it doesn't charge money. It doesn't do anything. It just basically allows you to install, so it puts an actual receipt in the store so the rest of the IAP on the phone works properly. And then you say install. And then we tilt the phone one more time. And you see that you got it. And then when we go back, it's right over here. So this is using the actual IAP system on the phone from the emulator, hitting the actual service. I have this app up as a beta with IAP items exactly the same way that Saral was talking about. And we were able to do it. So I used the mock to help me iterate over things very quickly as I'm developing the app. And then once I got my flow right and everything, I switch over to the real thing and I can test with it. One last word, because I know I would do that definitely. Please don't ship with the mock IAP. Just saying, because I would do that. I'm sure I will. Just make sure you don't ship with the mock IAP. And that's it. I will pass it on to Arvind, who's going to talk to us about Dev Center. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. I'm Arvind Ladda from the Windows Phone Dev Center team. In the next few minutes, what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you how to use Dev Center to create products and how to submit them. So this morning, it's not switched yet. Earlier this morning, we updated the Windows Phone Dev Center site. We have made a lot of different improvements on the site. Before I show you how to use in-app products in the Dev Center site, I'm going to show you one thing, and then we'll go see how to do products. You'll notice that on the top of the site, we have changed how you access information on the site. We used to have dashboard at the beginning. We've changed the order of the tabs on the top, and we've added a brand new section called Design. So let's go to Design. The Windows Phone design team has put together tons of design resources that we think you will find useful as you start building your new experiences. They've also shared a lot of principles and processes and templates that we have used internally while we are designing the Windows Phone experiences. So something that you can leverage as you design your experiences. We hope that you will find them useful and inspiring. So the next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to actually go to the picture puzzle. Many of you who are using Dev Center today probably are familiar with this page. This is the lifecycle page of the picture puzzle. I've selected the products tab. And at the bottom of the page, I have a list of products that I have already submitted for this puzzle. What you'll notice is that the same app has both types of in-app products. It has consumables and durables. You can do both of them for any app. What we're going to do is I have started the submission process for an in-app product so that I don't have to start from scratch during the demo. So during this demo, we'll just go ahead and finish the submission. You'll notice that the submission process for an in-app product is very, very similar to the submission process for apps. It's a simple two-step process. So in the first step, you basically tell Dev Center about the in-app product. Every in-app product needs an alias just like an app. You're going to need a product identifier that you would have used in code. You need to tell Dev Center what kind of a in-app product you're building. The key thing to note about the first three fields on this page is that once you submit your in-app product, you can't change this, so you want to be careful when you're submitting these. The next thing we have is the default language. A lot of you might have apps that support a lot more languages than your in-app product. So let's say you support all the 50 languages for your app, but you want to describe your product in fewer languages. Then this would be the language we would default back to in case we don't find the right language for your in-app product. So I've already set the price of this in-app product to 99 cents. I want to distribute this product in all the available markets. I want this to publish as soon as the in-app product is certified. I've already gone ahead and set keywords that Saral talked about. I've set the tags. Thing to note about keywords and tags, both of these are optional, so if you don't want to use them, that's fine. You can always go back and change this, so even after you've published your in-app products, you can change this. So this gives you some ability to dynamically control the behavior of your app without having to change code. The last thing you need to give on this page is tell Dev Center in how many languages you want to describe the in-app product, things like title and description that your end users want to see. You can always change this at a later point of time. So for now, I'm going to leave it as English. I'm going to go ahead and save this information. So what Dev Center is doing is, because I said I want to publish this in-app product in all the 190 markets, in the back end, it's making sure it's picking up the base price and calculating the price for all the 190 markets. We're going to go to the next step, which is describing the product. So on this page, you basically describe the product for your end users. So we have a product title field. Here is where you would tell what you want end users to see when they actually go through the purchase experience. So I've defaulted that to puzzle 5. The description is an optional field, so we can skip that. And then the last thing is you give a product image. So this is the image you would see when you go through the purchase flow. Let's go ahead and save that. Before I submit the in-app product, there's one more thing I want to do. What I want to do actually is, you'll see on this page, DevCenter has already gone ahead and set the pricing for the 191 markets based on that one base price. I want to actually go and change the price for some of these markets. You can do that in the new version of DevCenter. You can basically say, hey, for example, I don't want to charge in Afghanistan, or I want to double the price. Let's just say I want to say $199 in Albania. So you can do that. And the thing to note is this functionality is also available for your apps. So if you wanted to do something similar for your apps, you can now do that. So I'm going to go ahead. I didn't want it. And I'm going to go ahead and save this. Now, once I save this, I can go back and submit. Once I submit this in-app product to DevCenter, it will go through certification, and it will get published. So let's go ahead and submit it. Now, let's assume that the in-app product has been certified, it got published, users are downloading your in-app product. Now, at some point, you want to start tracking your sales and how your in-app products are doing. So for that, we have a chart for in-app purchases. It's very, very similar to the app download chart. Let me scroll down. At the bottom on the x-axis, you'll see a timeline. And on the y-axis, you'll see the daily download counts or daily purchase counts. On your right-hand side, you'll see cumulative counts. You can always go back and change if you had multiple apps, if you wanted to focus on a specific product, you can do that. You can export this data into an XLS file if you wanted to do that. So as you can see, the process to manage and submit in-app products is very, very simple and similar to what you do for apps. Before I end the demo, there's one more thing I want to show you. So let me go back to the app downloads report. Many of you are already familiar with this report. One thing that we have heard from all of you is the latency of this report. Until today, or rather until yesterday, we had a 6-day latency. So it used to, the data on this report was 6 days old. In today's release, we have fixed that. And instead of 6 days, we have brought it down to about 48 hours. So that's a big change. What you'll notice is that if you notice the end date field, today is 30th in the US, but the field right now is showing 29. The date comes from is based on UTC time, so depending on which part of the world you are and where you are seeing this data, it may be about 48 hours, depending on that. So with that, I'm going to call Zach back.
All right, great. Thank you, Armin. Great improvements in the Dev Center. All this stuff, you wrap it up together, and I think that you have all of the tools that you're going to need. But I do have just two more slides that you have to see. You're going to love these. Shift F5, that works, right? Go PowerPoint. It only works if the computer listens. All right. Advance, advance, advance. All right, here we are. So if you can walk out of here with one phrase in your mind, this would be it. In fact, if you leave this conference with only one phrase in your mind, this has to be it. Windows Phone 8 in-app purchase makes it easy for you to securely sell both consumable and durable digital products to consumers with payment instruments that they can really use worldwide. But wait, it even works for 7.5 Zaps, as long as those Zaps are running on 8.0 phones. The demo that you saw earlier with Taptitude, as you all probably know, at least any of you that are building XNA games, XNA does not port forward to 8.0. Taptitude is an XNA title, and they are running in-app purchase, and they're doing it in the same binary and with the same project that they target all of their Mango customers with. All right, so PS. Your vote counts. We need as much feedback as we can get to make these presentations better over time, to grow and make these things more fun for you, even though it's the very end of the day and I know you're really, really tired, please fill out your evals. The goodies that you all will be procuring will be available here in this building, as well as 33, so you don't have to rush off. You do have a couple minutes. They'll be handing them out downstairs. And we'll find a way to get you this deck. I'm not sure whether they're all being posted yet, but here are the resources that we've been talking about throughout the presentation. Maybe you can take a picture with your phone right now. We have some sort of shortened URLs that should get you there quickly. I'd like to invite all of our speakers back up on stage, and we're going to go ahead and take questions now. Thank you all for your time, and I hope you have a great time at Build.
I didn't hear a mention of, recurring charges. Does that exist yet?
We do not have subscription charges, recurring charges, for the 8.0 release.
Okay. Do you have a question?
Yes.
I have a bunch. So go ahead.
If you guys have questions, will you head up to the mic so that we can get it on?
When you ran the app in the emulator at the payment screen, you had to rotate the emulator. Is that a property of the emulator, or does the purchase page not support landscape?
No, the purchase page does not support landscape.
Does Windows 8 also have something similar to this for in-app purchases?
Yes, Windows 8 is very similar. As Saral was saying, our IDL is the same. So what you'll find is if you write the code for one, it will build in both places. Now, that being said, there are some features that we have that Windows 8 does not implement and vice versa. So it's not just a direct conversion for all scenarios. Some things just work. Others, they're unique to the platform.
I didn't quite catch what you said, if you addressed it. You said that, so you can do all the testing in the emulator. Actually, it's kind of a two-part. In the emulator, if I reset the emulator, does that mean that all the licenses reset? Or
Yeah.
You said it like on the server, too, so.
No.
It's all in the emulator.
Yeah, okay. So as soon as, if you turn off the emulator, turn it back on, you're good. And okay. The mock IP library has a way to call a method to clear the entire cache that it keeps.
Great. And if I do release it to beta as a way to get some testing, do the beta purchases actually go through?
No, items have to be free for the beta.
Yeah.
Oh, that's how you do it, is by marking them free.
All beta items are, we just kind of fake the transaction back to you. So in durables, let's say you want to test repeat purchases, like say you made a mistake and you want to rewrite your code, all you need to do is kind of bring up the application again and we'll let you purchase it.
Great.
There is a unique value of the beta system that you don't get from other things, the signing.
Yeah, so the signing is real, so you can test the signature on that.
Okay, thank you.
I have an application that runs in the Windows Store, and I'm planning to move it to Windows Phone as well.
Great.
I love it.
It started out in Windows Phone. I moved it to the Store, and now, I got it. I'm covering your whole platform. So my question is this. I want to implement in-app purchase inside of the Windows Store. And, of course, when I release a new one, I want to have it work in Windows Phone as well. Are the durables going to work across both platforms? If somebody buys it on one, they'll see the durable in the other platform? So
what we built is a transaction processing system.
Right.
The purchase that was completed on Windows will only be available on Windows, and the purchase that was completed on Windows Phone will only be available on Windows Phone. So you won't be able to just automatically see it. If you want to, for example, unlock an avatar item and you want that item to be owned in both places,
yes,
you have to build that into your own server.
Okay, but I can buy it, someone can buy it somewhere, and then I can communicate to the other device that it's owned by them.
See, that's a great scenario for when I was mentioning that you can return the receipt to you and I said, I don't need it. That's a great scenario where you can do something like that, where you send that receipt up to your server along with the identity of the user of some sort, some ID for it, so that on the Windows side you can check that, he actually has a receipt that you can validate that came from the phone.
Okay, one other question.
To add to the receipt format between both platforms is identical as well. So once you write that code for one, you'll be able to use it on both platforms.
And we have code in MSDN to show you how to can validate the signature and stuff like that.
Okay. So the APIs are similar in both places, or nearly identical. You guys have a few more features in the Windows Phone Store than a Win 8, right? I'm saying the right things. What about the store? What about the actual setting up the products? Do I have to set them up in two independent places?
Yeah, yes. Unfortunately, you do for everyone.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Minimum purchases for in-app, is there a minimum amount? Or 99 what?
Cents. Yeah, it's 99 cents.
Okay, thanks.
But to add to that, as Zach mentioned, you could create your own virtual economy. So as you saw in Taptitude, when I bought, for a dollar, I could buy 100 credits. And with those 100 credits, I could buy a shirt for 50 and, you know, something else for 5. You know, it just depends. So then, based on our policy, it allows you, gives you the flexibility to kind of do smaller transactions.
Okay, thanks.
Got it?
I noticed the payment. Sorry, it's me again. I noticed on the payment screen you say no refunds, which is what you always say. Mm-hmm. So I wonder why it's just always there, I'm guessing. But clearly there must be a process for chargebacks and even like complaints or some kind of, there's got to be some system like that. So is that just something we never worry about, or would complaints end up funneling back somehow, or how do you manage that side of it?
That guy right there wants to answer that question.
You will yell at us?
Our policy is now.
Do you want to use the microphone just so that everybody can hear, please, Bernardo?
Yes, the policy we have is no refunds. It's 99 cents. I mean, so there could be some exceptions if somebody's go through something extraordinary. But, I mean, I've seen very, very, very few, just a handful. So the process to refund 99 cents globally, it's just such a pain, such an expense that really we don't do it now, unless there's a reason for that. Like if somebody purchased 100,000 of those by mistake in a big company, maybe we could consider that. But it's not something we implement then.
It's a manual process.
We don't really allow it. It would have to be an exception approved at a very high level for a 99 cent dollar or a $14. We've seen extremely few of those. It's just not done normally.
Okay.
The question, hey Bernardo, the question may be, if that were to happen, if such a dispute were to arise, would the ISV be involved in the discussion?
It really depends on the type of issue. I mean, we've seen frauds, for example. That's some of the things that my team does, and then we'll have to investigate them and take action. But really, for a very, very small amount of items, we typically don't do that. It would take a big exception to do that. That's not part of the normal process.
You have to approve the items, right? There's a delay when you submit it. There's some kind of process.
Yeah, what we do is we just do some lightweight certification on the content. We want to be sure that you're not posting, for example, titles that are profane, that are going to appear in the user experience, things like that. It's very lightweight, the content approval.
I have a question regarding the different markets that you assign to, that we can make purchases to. Do we know that what market did the user make purchase from, like different amounts? Like, do we get that in the receipt or something?
Yeah, the receipt contains the user ID, the time of purchase, the device ID the purchase was made on, the price, the pre-formatted price paid. So you can see that it was made, for example, in USD.
Okay. So you mentioned device ID. So what consists of a device ID in a Windows Phone?
There's a unique ID per publisher, per device.
So
you can use that device ID, and any of your applications will see that as the same ID. And the same thing is true of user ID. So if you use the user ID, that user ID will always be the same for the same person, even no matter what device they roam to.
I see.
As long as it's a Windows Phone device. And so then you have those receipts in your back end, and you can just send you can get the user ID. There's an API for that. You just call to get the user ID from any device, send it to your back end, and query to see what's owned on your own receipt cache in the back end, if you'd like.
So it's about time, right?
Yeah.
So we will take questions. We'll hang out, but we can wrap up the recording. So we will be here taking more questions.
Done over the mic then?
So thanks, everybody.
Yeah.